אז הערב אני מדבר עוד פעם באנגלית, זה זורם לי הרבה יותר. אם מישהו רוצה תרגום, בת אל שם, היא מתנדבת לעשות תרגום. So, we're all wonderful English speakers, listeners. The subject of the talk tonight is taken from a Tibetan image, and it's called Heaven and Earth on the Tip of Our Finger. Some time ago, when I used to sit with Goenka, a Vipassana teacher, maybe all of you know of him. Every time I had a problem, my back hurt, I felt tremendously uncomfortable, I wanted to run away, his reaction was to laugh. And it was quite irritating. I'm coming with my problem, which was so big and so serious, and filling my whole practice, and all he did was laugh. A friend of mine told me that he came to Goenka many years ago with a major psychological problem, which was a problem of depersonalization, which meant more or less for 2 years he didn't sleep, he couldn't lead a normal life, and he was within a hair's breadth of being locked up in a mental home. He went to Goenka, and he told Goenka about this, and Goenka laughed even more, just a huge laugh, and it seemed like the more the problem, the bigger his laugh. And gradually I realized that there are kind of two ways of looking at the same situation, from the place of the student. The problem, the difficulty, the struggle, the daily life, from the perspective of Goenka, the teacher, for whom all of that was a great big joke. So, to me, this is the heaven and the earth. And we ourselves are always, or often, moving between heaven and earth. The heaven for us is freedom, joy, the memory we have of childhood, the memory we have of all of us, the peace of being completely with ourselves, in nature, in front of beauty, moments of feeling that nothing is missing at this moment. And I think all of us have those experiences, which we can call heaven. And indeed, there are some teachers in the Theravada tradition that say that those experiences are an element of nirvana, meaning that if we didn't have such experiences, we would be locked in suffering. And it's the sense that we already have freedom in us which allows us to actually work with suffering, work with difficulty, and not be locked, frozen inside a limited world. So the heaven is in us, and the earth, or the negative side, or what we call difficulty, is also in us. Daily life, that some of us find such a struggle, the conflict that seems everywhere, the human tragedy that seems like all the beautiful kids that are born to joy and freedom, and after a while end up being, well, your favorite enemies, whatever you want to call them, politicians, whatever, whoever, they end up being somewhere else. And there is a human tragedy in that. And sometimes we feel that we are trapped in this human condition. We are trapped down on the earth, and we want to be up there in heaven, we want to be in the realm of joy and freedom. We read a book that inspires us and we feel lifted up, in a sense the memory or the trigger of this freedom, and then we go to work the next day and we feel, oh, down again, back to our daily grind. The English, if you ask them very often, how are you? The answer is, traditional answer is, mustn't complain. Like, I want to complain, but I won't. It's a traditional answer, mustn't complain. In other words, life is a misery, but we'll make the best of it. And what happens with this duality of heaven and earth, the difficulty and the hint, the remes, the sense that there is a place of joy and freedom that we know, is that we feel ourselves here and want to be there. And classically, this comes in statements like, I want the Mashiach to come, or I want to be free. And if we look at that a little bit more carefully, this statement is a statement of being down here on the earth, on the mundane level. I, this being, want, desire for freedom, some other place, in the future. I want freedom, I want release, is a statement from down here. And as an existential statement, it just speaks of our suffering. I am here and I want to be there. And it makes us also use, this is a habit of the mind, it's a duality, and it makes us want to use meditation for this purpose as well. I want to enter a retreat for the sake of results. I want to be free. I want to get rid of my headache. I want to reduce the problems in my life, to solve the problems in my life. I'm coming for 3 days and I want a result at the end of the 3 days. Can you promise me a result? And maybe I should be 10 days. Maybe if 3 is not enough, but 10 will maybe get me what I need. And it's just a very natural process of this duality, of being here and wanting to be there. What is often called in the tradition, the becoming, wanting to become something better, wanting to be something else, bhava, wanting to be. But it's worth thinking, it's worth contemplating, who made the difference, which I call in the image heaven and earth. Who made the difference between the mundane and the free and joyful? Is it in existence itself, this difference? Between the difficult and the bliss? Between the hard and the freedom? Who made it? Where did it come from? Is it in existence? And in existence, we can't find this duality. And therefore it's in existence that we need to be in order to solve this problem. And the Buddhist way has a very unique emphasis on connection with existence itself as a way of transcending the duality of I'm down here and I want to be there. But the Buddhist way is very deeply concerned with transcending this issue, this problem, this duality. And in a word, as a Zen phrase says, if you cannot find the truth where you are, so where can you find it? There is, in other words, an emphasis on, in the being here in existence, There is the place to solve our problems. We cannot look for it somewhere else. We cannot stand down here and look up there. We cannot look from the present to the future for solutions. We cannot push down our relationship to daily life and say it's terrible, and we cannot look up to heaven and say it's wonderful, we want to be there. That the present moment, here and now, is where everything comes together, and it's there that we have to work, and there that we can find our freedom. So meditation is not a means to an end, a way to achieve something. Meditation is the means and the end. In other words, the act of meditation itself is an answer. It's not meditation to bring us to a certain place, because again we're in the duality of wanting to being here and wanting to be somewhere else. The process of meditation itself is a goal, is both the means and the goal. In the moment, in our experience in the moment, there is the place of freedom. And the reason that we can say this is because what happens in meditation, what happens in our practice, is a shift in attitude. That what we're practicing for is not to achieve an experience so much as to change our attitude to what is. And as we change our attitude, this difference between daily life down here and freedom up there, that changes by itself. So we need to shift our eyes, our consciousness, to look differently, more from the perspective of existence, and less from the perspective of good and bad, tovli, lo tovli, not good for me, yes, good for me. Shift in attitude is the result of meditation and the practice of meditation. A shift in attitude to ourselves and to life. Take an example of, we sit here with pain in the body. It's difficult for us, maybe for some of us here. We're not used to it. We're not used to sitting still. Pain in the back, or pain in the legs, or discomfort, or we feel uncomfortable. And at first, it's a struggle. We feel the pain of it. We feel we suffer. We judge ourselves. We feel a victim. We struggle with it. It's a struggle. Gradually, if we relax a little bit, we become used to it, and we change our way of looking at pain or difficulty, it slowly becomes less of a struggle. It's more like, yes, there is pain, it hurts, but I'm able to be with it. It's just existence. Here is me sitting with pain. It's the nature of existence at this moment. Slowly, that movement of accepting reality and being with reality in the present, that shifts our attitude. We become less of a suffering victim of difficulty, and more just being with, in the present moment, whatever life reveals to us, whatever life gives to us. This moment pleasant, and next moment not very pleasant. It's a shift. And it's a shift in attitude, and in a shift in how we are with ourselves. And you could say that in a way the spiritual life, especially in this kind of practice, is about changing the how we are. Not getting to a certain place, but how are we in each moment? How are we experiencing things? It's as if it's a kind of quality of experience. How we are with our pain at this minute. Are we a partner with it? Are we allowing it? Are we in dialogue with it? Are we receiving it as phenomena, as experience, and just being steady with it? Or are we feeling the victim? Are we feeling it's, I want to get rid of it, I want to stop it, I want the pleasure, I want to achieve something, I want to be pain-free? The how, the attitude, is more an attitude of being with, of receiving, allowing, and flowing with the experience as it happens, moment by moment. It's a shift towards reality and away from interpretation. It's a shift towards senses, what our sense, our chushim, our senses tell us, and away from judgment or preference or sorting what the world out according to me, my interests. It's a shift towards contact with whatever comes up for us. One moment painful, next moment pleasant. An acceptance, a welcoming of life as it flows, as it reveals itself to us. That's a shift in attitude. As this shift happens to us, it changes our life. And that's the key why we don't look for a special experience. Because the meditation practice is kind of like a laboratory. It's a bit like a mabada, laboratory. We sit here on the cushion. It's a little bit artificial. We come from busy life and we stop. And we close ourselves in a room. And some of you may think, well, why do I need this? I should be able to be free in my ordinary life. Why do I need to do something so special and strange as to sit and shut up for hour after hour and watch my breath? The answer is that it's in this process, intense, more focused than in ordinary life, it's in this process of the laboratory, the mabada, of the meditation cushion, that we learn a different way of relating to our experience, a different attitude, an attitude of flowing with, an attitude of accepting, agreeing, allowing, being interested in the events of life as they show themselves to us. And the result of that is in our daily life. If we have to do the washing up in the kitchen, it's not that we begin this attitude, we take it into everything we do. The washing up becomes possibly a sensory experience for us. We touch the water, we touch the plates, we feel ourselves present. Instead of thinking, oh, I can't do washing up, it's horrible, it's all piled up there, I want someone else to do it, and I want to go and read a spiritual book. Much better than the washing up. I want to learn Dharma, and the washing up can be done by somebody else. No, the Dharma is in the attitude we bring to the washing up. The Dharma is in the way we are when we do the dishes, or when, as I said last night, we are with ourselves in all the little things in life. Someone told me that at the end of Maimonides, Rambam, the Morei Nevuchim, the guide for the perplexed, he says, what's the test of a man that's gone through all the journey of the mitzvot and the way of life, the halakha? What's the test? And his answer is, how he is when no one is looking at him. How he is on the toilet. How he is in his own private place. How? And Rambam says, how? How we are. In other words, the quality of our being is the reason for our practice. To change the quality of our being and not to achieve, at the end of 3 days, a result called freedom, or more freedom, or whatever we want. This movement towards joining heaven and earth in the present moment is the quote from the Tibetan tradition that says, when you hear the sound of the bell as it really sounds, it joins heaven and earth together at the tip of your finger. That's the quotation. When you hear the sound of the bell as it really is, it joins heaven and earth together at the tip of your finger. This difference dissolves. There isn't any more daily life here, freedom there, difficulty here, bliss there. It's joined together right here and now, right here in front of you. And it's the senses, it's the touch that does it. The hearing of the bell, the touch of the breath, the touch of life, the taste of the food, the touch of the floor as we walk, the movement of our legs, the thoughts that pass by, our life, but direct, the touch of our life, the how we are with our experience. Robert Pirsig, who wrote Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, has a nice quote about this. He says, the only truth you find at the top of the mountain is the truth you bring up with you. The only truth you find at the top of the mountain is the truth that you bring up with you. So it's not up there somewhere else. It's the truth that we have in the here and now. This is not a conceptual teaching. This is not a teaching that is possible to learn from books. This is not a teaching of the university. And in this way, we leave behind the commentaries about our life. This is a teaching about direct contact with our existence, allowing and receiving and being with the flow of our existence. A Zen teacher called, a Zen master from several hundred years ago called Ikkyu said, every day priests examine the Dharma and they endlessly chant complicated sutras, complicated texts. Before doing that, they should learn how to read the love letters sent by the wind and the rain, the snow and the moon. I'll read it again. Every day, priests examine the Dharma and endlessly chant complicated sutras. Before doing that, they should learn how to read the love letters sent by the wind and the rain, the snow and the moon. It's a direct touch with things. And as we practice and touch the things of our life, the senses, the touch of the unfolding present as it unfolds for us in each moment, there's not only less need to sort out the good from the bad, there's also a sense of mystery in it. I mean, you know, if we look at our hand, we just see spots and change and marks, and we can look at our hand, you know, just look at it. I mean, what is this thing? It's marks, it's movement, it's change, it's patterns, it's differences. There's a beautiful story from the suttas about Ananda who gives a massage to the Buddha. And the Buddha is very old at the time of this story. And I guess Ananda, who was his main helper and disciple, one of his main disciples, must also be pretty old at this time. So Ananda is giving a massage to the Buddha. And in my imagination I see these two old monks, two old wise monks, giving each other massage and talking about it. And Ananda says to the Buddha, "Whoa, look at your skin. It's all falling down and loose. How amazing." And the Buddha says, "Oh yeah, it's really amazing. How astonishing. Look at the way the skin is all falling down." And Ananda says, "Look at your skin. It's wrinkled and full of colors and spots." And the Buddha says, "Yes, look at this skin. It's quite extraordinary how it's full of wrinkles and spots." And Ananda says, "Look at your flesh. It's all dried up. Isn't that extraordinary?" And the Buddha says, "Yes, it's quite amazing. Look at the flesh, it's all dried up." There isn't a sense there like, "Oh dear, I'm old and, you know, it's a problem." It's like, "Wow, look at this. What an amazing change is happening." It's returning wonder to the ordinary in the present moment. A moment that really touches me deeply is a moment with my mother, who for many years had Alzheimer's disease, and she died a couple of years ago. And there was a certain period in her Alzheimer's where she became like a happy child. And I remember taking her to Switzerland, and we walked in the forest. And we walked every day for hours and hours together. And she was already ill with the disease, or in a stage of really forgetting where she was, or who she was. But she would stop in front of a tree, a pine tree, Eitz Oren, in the middle of 10,000 other pine trees, as far as I could see, thousands of pine trees. She would stop in front of the pine tree and say, "Oh, I have never seen such a thing in my life before." And she'd stop in front of another tree that fell down in the storm, and there were many trees fallen down in the wind, and she would cry. She would say, "Oh, look, how sad. The tree fell down." And she would start to cry. And it's amazing. And in a way, it's the present moment. Because the present fills us, if we are not so identified with our history, conditioning, all the stuff we carry, all the past we carry, and the future that we want. The present opens to us, and it's amazing. And that's the shift in attitude I'm talking about. Less memory, less control, looking deeply, seeing the way things open. Thoughts come, seeing the way they open for us. Feelings come, seeing the way they open for us. Just allowing and letting things express themselves inside us. And in the sense, there's no problem in the present moment. This is not an easy thing to understand, but it is an experience that we can feel. If we're truly connected to the present moment, it doesn't have any problem in it. There can be pain. There can be difficulty, but it's not really a problem. It's just the experience of pain. It's just the experience of, at this moment, hunger. At this moment, tiredness. At this moment, sensations of uncomfort, discomfort. At this moment, sensations and experiences of comfort, pleasure. And at this moment, experiences of nothing much. No comfort, and no discomfort. And that's the truth of this moment, and there's no problem in any of them. So the present, in the present moment, it's a place where inherently, in the nature of things, there are no problems. In the present moment, it's in the nature of reality, there are no problems. It's just like in existence there's no problem. It's us that make a difference between heaven and earth by our preferences, by our decisions, by our desires and needs, by our history and our habits. So I'm sure that many of you are thinking, yeah, but I have a history. Don't tell me I don't have a history. I mean, it's all very well being in the present moment, but what about my history? And my history tells me I'm a student in university, and my history tells me I'm a professor in university that's giving a hard time to the students, or I'm working in a factory, or I'm sad and lonely right now in my life, or I'm happy and whatever. That's my history. So don't destroy my history. And there is sometimes a kind of concern that the spiritual path is like a kind of a partition, a hammer on the head. You kind of give yourself a big knock and you forget who you are and you forget your history and you become like Alzheimer and sort of wander in the world. So nice. It's a misreading of the change in attitude that I'm talking about. Because the change in attitude is not a denial of our history and is not a cancelling out of our history. It is a different relationship to our history. In the same way it's a different relationship to our pain in the back, it's a different relationship to our history, to our childhood, to our psychological issues, to what happened to me when I was a child or what happened to me yesterday. It's a change in attitude. So what is the attitude to history? In a sense, we are here because we are formed. We are formed beings. We are made from matter, breath, whatever, molecules, carbon, oxygen. We are formed, and we are formed, each one of us, in a different way, and we have a history because it happens to us. Our family is like that. We are born like this. We are in the rechem, the womb of the mother, like that, and this particular mother made this particular body, and what I did, what people said to me, what my decisions, what my choices, this created me at this moment, each of us. So we are personalities, forms, growing out of life as form. It's easy to see in olive trees. I like to look at olive trees. And the olive tree is so expressive, Eitz Zayit. It's so expressive. You see the faces in the olive, and you see the way that the branches and the age of it and the story of it. And there's thousands of trees, and each one is so different. And so let's move out of human realm and talk about maybe olive trees. Olive trees, there you have a difference. Each one different, each one with a history, each one with a character. Constructed. Our issue with it is that we are so identified, we are so inside our particular form, that our history and our form become our total existence. And that's the problem with our history. Not that we shouldn't have one, but that we shouldn't be so identified with it. It's the hot. To be totally identified, that we build like a castle around our individuality, our self, our personality, and we close ourselves in it. I have to do that, my decision's like that, and I like this, and I feel like that, and I want this, and I don't want that, and that's what's right for me, and that's what's wrong for me. Magia lize. We build a castle, and we live inside it. And that's the problem with history. And if we can, in the present moment, is a place where we can be somewhat free of that history. That is, be with it, just like anything else that comes up. A memory comes up like a pain in the body. It's our history. A choice comes up, we have to choose something. It's like an experience of touch. It's just arriving. Our history just is another thing there for us in the present moment. And that presence is a much wider place. It's as if the olive tree is not looking at the field. The field is looking at the olive tree. It's as if we are bigger than just our history. The present moment is bigger than our own story. Our story is just one part of the present. There's no story in touch of the senses. There's no story in a breath. It's just a breath. There's no story in a sound. There's no story in a bell. It's not my sound that is. I have to kind of hold on to the sound of the bell, put it in my pocket, keep it for later. It's not mine. So there is a much bigger field here. It's just things passing through. It, in a certain way then, the experiences of the present moment are experiences without form, or formless, not constructed. The sound of the bell can be just sound of the bell. The touch is just a touch. It doesn't have to be my hand touching and holding. It's just touch. These experiences are basically formless. They don't have form. They have form if we say, I want something that creates relationship based on form, on me, I, this kind, this moment, I want. It closes the experience into a certain form, into a certain frame. So our practice can open the form into the formless, to be less full of form, construction. We don't construct, we just experience. Open, allowing. It's not constructed. If we look at ourself like that, then we can be free of our history. Our history is simply less important. And in a way it doesn't make sense, and in a way it doesn't need to make sense. It's not important whether it makes sense or doesn't make sense. This relationship between formless and form is I think it's what makes Goenka laugh when someone comes to him with a pain in the back. I think Goenka is laughing because someone comes with a pain in the back, and it's me, and it's my pain, and I'm suffering, and I'm under, and from a perspective of formless, it's a joke. It's amusing. It's another form, and another difficulty. It's another human being with another problem, with another issue. It's like forms are being created. The olive tree looks like this, the olive tree looks like that. And that perspective is the perspective of, well, what do you do with it? What do you do with it? There's freedom, there's amusement, there is a much bigger perspective, a life perspective, the perspective of the field and less of the olive tree. But to bring it down to earth, to our practice here this weekend, I think it has these kind of considerations, this view, the fact that we practice to change our attitude and not to get a specific result that we want, has some important practical results for us. One is that we don't need to measure ourselves. We don't need to measure our progress. And we don't need to compare ourselves with somebody else. Because we're not trying to get a result that is measurable. The result is a change in the way we look at things. And that's a much bigger thing than this particular retreat, or this particular moment, or how far I've got here, or how far I've got there. For example, we can see it is a life journey, and not as a retreat for 3 days. It's a life journey. And every amount of being in the present moment is worth something. In other words, we just have to do our job here and be in the present moment and not worry about results, because just being in the present, just being with the unformed, the way things arrive and the way things go and the touch of things, just doing that slowly shifts our attitude. And the whole journey is a journey of shift in the attitude, a shift in the way of being, shift in the how we are with our experience, not in a particular kind of experience that we want. So that frees us a lot. We don't need to come here and say, I must do something and achieve something by 3 days. We can feel that just what we're doing here, that much we take home with us. Nothing is lost. Being in the present changes our attitude, changes our like something shifts slowly, slowly, slowly over retreats, over the touch of reality, over our life journey, over whatever many retreats we sit, over our practice, our spiritual journey. Something moves each time, something changes each time, and there's no particular end point, and there's no particular experience that we need. It's just a movement towards, or a movement along, a movement change in the way we are with our experience, freeing up our experience from identification, from being so closed inside the kind of castle of our form, of our conditioning. All we need to do is spend as much time as possible quietly, aware, awake, present, in touch. That's all we need to do. And everything will look after itself. As much time as we have, we can be, and we should be there, in that place of quiet, presence, awake, aware, and in touch with the events as they unfold for us, moment by moment. So, nothing is lost. Just keep going, and freedom happens by itself. So let's take a few moments to sit quietly together.